Maybe nothing would have happened if Talia hadn't found the demon in the bread box.
What the?
When she opened the bread box to remove some for supper, she was startled to see, seated against the nearest loaf, a perfectly formed 6-inch-high homunculus. Two curved horns protruded from the sides of his skull, a single smaller one from his forehead. Gossamer rose-hued wings lay folded against his back. He wore long maroon denim pants with matching suspenders, and his clawed feet protruded beyond the ends of thick rubber sandals. He also owned a hearty appetite. Half the loaf he was seated against had been devoured. Startled, he jerked around sharply when she raised the lid of the box, a double handful of steaming fresh bread clutched in one tiny fist.
Azimak!
The creature waved its free hand at her.
Be gone, or I shall make of your life purgatory resplendent!
Get out of my bread box!
Fumbling in a nearby drawer, her fingers wrapped around the handle of a small iron skillet and thrust it toward the loaf. Dropping its aromatic prize, the demon scrambled toward the back of the box.
Imarion! Sakura Sanctus!
Never mind that.
Reversing the skillet, Talia used the handle to dig at the back of the box.
Get out of my bread!
Though not very big, Talia was deceptively strong, and the demon, sated on humberpine bread, was decidedly overfed. He lost his grip on the rear of the box and went flying, arms and legs flailing across the kitchen. He soared neatly over the central butcher block to smack with a splat against the rhomboidal window on the far side of the room. There, he seemed to hang for an instant, suspended, before sliding down the glass into the basin full of dishes.
Teach you to invade my bread box.
Hefting the skillet by its handle, Talia rushed to the sink and peered down.
What were you doing in my bread box? Does somebody have it in for me? Is that it? I'll bet it's that stuck-up possum Mrs. Genfine up the river. She always stays upside down when we visit.
The dazed demon struggled unsuccessfully to stand.
You're not much of a curse.
Something buzzed past her head. This new specter was smaller than the homunculus, with four bright emerald green wings and a long snaky tail trailing behind it. A face once removed from toad roadkill sneered back at her. From its four hands hung the crystal salt cellar that had been a wedding gift from her mother. She snatched for it, but it darted just out of reach, taunting her.
Now what?
Taking aim with the edge, she swung the skillet. The toad buzz dodged once, a second time, and then... The apparition fell on the stove, bounced once, and tumbled off to land on the floor. Unharmed, the salt cellar rolled clear. Ignoring the dazed buzzing of the would-be thief, she knelt to recover her item.
What the hell is going on here?
She put the skillet aside and pulled the big broom from storage. Now, where was that dustpan? As she bent over to search for it, something smacked her in the rear. Clutching the broom in front of her, she whirled. It couldn't be called a demon, though it wore a demonic grin. Considerably larger than the pair of intruders she'd already coped with, it squatted before her on thickly muscled kangaroo-like legs, its flat fish face regarding her blandly. Lavender scales covered the naked body, except for the pair of turquoise tentacles that made swimming motions against the air. Sprouting from the top of the head was a bright, rotating blue searchlight. She hefted the broom and inspected the newcomer.
What are you supposed to be?
Weeble.
It took a tentative hop toward her.
Keep away from me!
She made a threatening gesture with the broom as she started edging sideways, away from the broom closet.
I'm warning you!
The bread demon had recovered and was now busily poking through the kitchen cabinets, looking for something else to eat, its red belly hanging pendulously over its belt line.
What's going on here? John Tom!
Her husband wasn't due home from work for a while yet. She was isolated in her kitchen.
Somebody! Anybody!
She dodged as the hop searchlight took another bound in her direction, extending toward her face a vile and obscene tongue.
I warned you!
She swung the broom and smacked the tongue sideways. The protruding organ whizzed several times around the hopper's head before the tip smacked its owner square in the right eye.
Oh!
Beeble Hop retreated, trying to recoil the rebellious organ. The breadbox demon was in an upper cabinet now, scattering her victuals. Broom held high, she charged, shoving the hopper aside.
Damn your demonicus! Get out of my provisions!
When she reached the cabinet, the demon was nowhere to be seen, having sought the depths within. But half a dozen brand new apparitions flew straight out at her, squealing and screeching. As they circled and darted, she swung the broom in frenzied self-defense, fighting to keep them out of her hair.
Get away!
She flailed with the broom. They were pouring out of the woodwork now, drooling, grinning, gurgling, belching and farting. They stank, they gibbered, they messed impertinently with her clean dishes and pawed through her carefully stacked foodstuffs.
Get out of my kitchen! Get out of my house!
Something landed on her right shoulder. As she reached up to rip it off, she saw a small fat man with a cherubic expression. He was composed entirely of layers of some resilient white substance that threatened to rub off on her blouse.
Madam, I don't know what is going on here, but I have work to do elsewhere, and I resent most heartily being sucked in with the rest of these undisciplined and unrefined conjurations.
Don't blame me! I didn't conjure anything!
She grabbed the puffy white arm and wrenched. The limb promptly came off in her fingers. There was no blood, only a sort of thick black goo that began to ooze from the ruptured joints.
Now look what you have done. I will miss my next assignment.
Sorry.
Ugh. She handed back the amputated limb.
Merci.
With great dignity, the creature jammed the arm back into the vacant shoulder socket. It hopped off her shoulder and bounced across the floor, disappearing into the otherworldly tumult. She swung her broom and anything else she could find at the horde, while all around her, wee monstrosities and diminutive horrors gibbered contentedly as they reduced her kitchen to rubble.
That's enough! My sword!
She struggled to her feet.
Where did I store that damn sword?
She located it, jammed unceremoniously in the back of the broom closet.
Now we'll see who's boss around here!
Hefting the familiar old grip with both hands, she turned in her house dress to confront the room full of clawing, cawing demons.
Chaos! Repossess all of you, spawn of hell!
Swinging the sword in broad, powerful, horizontal arcs, she waded fearlessly into the babble. Heads, limbs, and interesting other body parts went flying as blood of dissimilar colors spurted, mixing with the spilled honey and milk in household cleansers. She knew it was going to take a heavy, not to mention expensive, house-cleaning spell to scrub away the carnage, but she was damned if she was going to clean up this mess manually. John Tom was going to have to drop whatever he was involved with and do something about it. She laid about the kitchen with a will. Just when she thought her trembling legs and arms were about to give out completely, and that the fanged and taloned mob of necrotic intruders were going to take her down for the last time, there came a sound from beyond the kitchen doorway.
Hi, honey, I'm home. Clothump and I finally got the old Tula Whip bridge braced with a decent suspension spell. Of course, only temporary, but...
John Tom strode around the corner and into the kitchen.
What the hell's going on here?
Don't just stand there! Do something!
He grabbed his door from the front room as he considered an appropriate song for the right spell. Years of practice under Clothahump's tutelage made him facile. He was infinitely more confident than the awkward young man who'd first found himself transported to this world. Still, he found himself struggling as he confronted the pandemonium in the kitchen. From cabinets and vents, from fractures in the floor, and the seams around windows, a pink haze began to emerge. Swirling in lazy currents, it picked its way into the kitchen, smelling faintly of pumpernickel and Simolo cheese. There was nothing John Tom could do about the latter. Considering what the miasma could have smelled like, he was rather pleased. Ancillary odors were not his primary concern at the moment. The slightly moist mist had an immediate effect on the army of invading fiends, or maybe it was the smell. From cabinets and shelves, from pots and pans and dishes, they ceased their activities to stare and sniff. One whiff was sufficient. Shrieking and screaming, they proceeded to get the hell out. Nostrils pinched, mouths puckered, they plunged back into the depths of the cupboards, the floor, the ceiling, returning at breakneck speed to the noxious nexi of their respective existences. In their panicked retreat, they took with them not so much as a cookie. The door pulsed and trembled in John Tom's practiced hands. Unsourced wind caused his iridescent green cape, which was overdue for dry cleaning, to stream out behind him, as though he stood in the forefront of an intense, localized squall. Her feet and composure regained, Talia warily trailed her husband as far as the sink. She laid the bloody sword lengthwise in the basin, shaking her head. Getting the blade properly clean was going to take a lot of scrubbing. Iker had a notorious tendency to cling. John Tom stood in the middle of the kitchen. As Talia stared, those demons unable to escape, or who had foolishly chosen to attack John Tom, began to swell like balloons. They started to rise, bouncing off the cabinets and finally the ceiling. As John Tom brought the song to an end, they began to burst.
Oh.
As if the kitchen wasn't enough of a mess already. Finally, nothing remained save swirling pink mist and a powerful scent of cheese and pumpernickel. As John Tom flung his fingers against the double strings of the door in one last dramatic riff, the mist faded and began to dissipate. John Tom turned to face Talia.
Now then, will you please tell me what happened here? Talia, have you been experimenting with thaumaturgical cooking spells again? I told you, I'm not that big on fried foods. Sometimes household shortcuts aren't worth the trouble they cause.
She waggled an admonishing finger in his face.
Don't you lip me, John Tom. I haven't done a damned thing.
Moving to the window over the sink, she fought to open it. Coagulating blood and gore caused it to stick. She waved at the remnants of the pink mist, backing away as fresh air sucked it outside. The heavy stink likewise began to disperse, leaving in its wake a faint memory of dill pickle. She gestured at the kitchen, her arm shaking slightly.
John Tom, I'm reasonably well-versed in the nature of the inhabitants of the Nether Regions. I'd have to be, being married to you. But I didn't recognize half of what materialized here.
Other dimensions, other demons. Don't blame yourself. Even the standard reference books have to be updated every year.
She leaned toward him, smiling at sudden memories.
Sometimes I think things were easier when you and I were on the road all the time. Fighting and slaughtering, living by our wits, having fun.
We were a lot younger then, Talia. I didn't have the responsibilities that come with being Clothahump's junior partner. We didn't have a home or a family.
You're 41, John Tom. That's hardly old.
I didn't say it was. By now, Mick Jagger must be... Never mind. This doesn't tell us what happened here.
Maybe I mixed something wrong. Maybe I whistled a happy tune the wrong way. Maybe some netherworld entity has a grudge against you from some years-old encounter you've long since forgotten.
I could check the records, but... As near as I can remember, all old conflicts have been resolved. All numinous debts paid off.
You're sure you haven't offended any important deities or spirits recently? Trod on the toes of some easily offended Prince of Darkness?
Clothahump and I are careful to observe all protocols. We're very proud of our work habits. Before signing any contracts, we run them through half a dozen legal spells and have at least 3 eternally damned lawyers checking them for errors. I'm clean, darling. Even if there was a serious problem somewhere, the provoked entity would take up the quarrel with me, not you.
I don't know about that. All I know is what went on in my kitchen. Unless you isolate the causality, it could happen again. Ugh.
I know that, love. Interdimensional manifestations of pure evil don't just happen. There has to be a reason. It has to be something I've done. Or haven't done.
They fell silent. After a moment, Talia looked up.
Listen. That's coming from upstairs.
John Tom followed his wife's gaze. They exchanged a look.
There it is, then. You haven't offended any paranormal princes, and it's not a consequence of random chance. The plated folk aren't involved, and neither are the inimical outer guards of proximate perdition. It's much, much worse than that.
Her gaze rose, tracking the inhuman discord.
John Tom, you have got to do something about that kid.